Thanks for the organizers for inviting me here. It's yeah, it's always wonderful to be here. Incredible place to work and have ideas. Okay, so let's crack on. So everything I talk about today is going to be centered on quivers. So Q will always denote a quiver, i.e. I will have a pair of maps between a pair of finite sets where these are the arrows and these are the vertices. So really I'm just fixing notation here. S stands for source, T stands for target. Is this now large enough? Anton, you're furthest?
Yeah.
Okay. So let gamma be a tuple of positive numbers. This is what's known as a dimension vector. And I should say, this first part of the talk has a name. So the first part of the talk is on perverse filtrations. Just because I promised I would speak about them a bit. And also, I should apologize to anyone who was at my last talk here. Ah, yes. There will be a mighty overlap, but I've thrown in some new stuff. Okay, so I'm going to talk about perverse filtrations in this first part, and also, for the benefit of everyone, even give a definition of equivariant cohomology. So really, something for everyone here. So let's see. Again, just fixing notation. This stands for affine space. This is some large space of representations of my quiver. So I take the product over the arrows in the quiver of homomorphisms from the complex vector space of dimension given by the dimension vector at the source of my arrow to the similar vector space defined with reference to the target. This then is acted on by G gamma, which is the product over the vertices of automorphisms of these vector spaces. So let's see. Okay, so this is some space of representations of my quiver of fixed dimension vector, and this is the gauge group, which acts transitively on isomorphism classes of representations. And in order to get to perverse filtrations, or the perverse filtration that I really care about, well, for a perverse filtration, one always has a map. And traditionally, that map is proper. Well, I'm going to give you a map. And it's going to be quite a long way from that. So here's my map. First, I consider the stack of gamma dimensional representations of Q, which is just the stack theoretic quotient of A gamma by G gamma. And then I have a map from here to a space, which I'm going to call x gamma q. So as a variety, not a stack, this is given by the spectrum of the functions on this space, which are invariant under the action of g gamma. So this is really the affinization of the stack. This obviously has a moduli theoretic interpretation. It's the stack of gamma dimensional Q representations. This also does. So this is the coarse moduli space of gamma dimensional reps. Points in this space are given by semi-simple. Gamma dimensional reps. And that explains, hopefully, or I will explain, why this is called JH. So JH is the Jordan Holder map, which takes a point in here, which represents some module, some gamma dimensional Q representation, and sends it to its semi-simplification. In other words, the direct sum of the subquotients appearing in some or any Jordan Holder filtration of my representation. So it sends a point corresponding to module to the semi-simplification. Okay, so what do I want to say about this map? This map is something of a mess in terms of the fibers, in terms of the singularities. It's a long way from being representable because this is a scheme and this is a stack. But nonetheless, it's going to turn out that this map shares a lot of the nice features of a proper map. In particular, there is a version of the decomposition theorem of Williamson, Bernstein, Deline, and Gaba that remains true for this map and maps like it. Okay, so on to the promised explanation of what equivariant cohomology is. So the cohomology of a variety or a topological space is the derived push forward of the constant sheaf from that space to a point. I'm going to tell you how to calculate something, some kind of intermediate thing. Tell you how to go about calculating the push forward along this map of the constant sheaf on here. So this is always the derived push forward. So I'm going to calculate it cohomological degree by cohomological degree. So really, I'm going to tell you how to work out what this is. And the recipe if you're familiar with the Borel construction, is to approximate that. So the Borel construction typically gives you some infinite dimensional thing. We want to work in the category of finite type Artin stacks or schemes. So that's not quite available to us, but we can approximate that. So explicitly, fix n very large, depending on I. Let Vn be a G gamma representation such that there is some UN inside VN open subvariety such that the G gamma action on UN is free. And we're going to ask that the codimension inside Vn of Vn take Un is very large. In particular, it's bigger than n. Okay. So let me start a new board for this diagram. So what are we trying to do? We have this space mapping down by a JH to X gamma Q. calculating the cohomology of this space is really the same as calculating the G gamma equivariant cohomology of this space, and likewise for this push forward. So I wonder if I've left myself enough space. So one thing we can do, instead of trying to solve this problem, instead of trying to calculate the derived push forward along this guy, is to take A Q gamma times Vn moduli of G gamma. OK, so if we can calculate the push forward of the constant sheaf from here to here, then we'll be done, because this is a homotopy equivalence. The fibres here are just given by affine space. But we haven't really improved the situation at all. The problem we had in the first place was that we were trying to calculate the push forward of the constant sheaf from a stack down to a scheme. But this is still a stack. In particular, it still contains this space as this space across the zero section. So we haven't actually improved the situation much. But then what we do is consider U. This is a U. This is a V. Consider instead this. So now, because of our conditions on UN, this is a variety. And we have a map, what am I calling this? Iota, which is a homotopy equivalence in low degree. And let me be more specific about what I mean by that. I mean that if I take the truncation functor with respect to the perversity structure or the constructible one, it doesn't matter, of this derived functor applied to the map, the restriction map, rep gamma q. Call this q, q, lower star, iota, lower star. But this is the constant sheaf here. Because all I've done is removed a very, very high codimension subvariety, this will give me an isomorphism in low degree cohomology. So this in particular is an isomorphism. So although the map from here to here is not a homotopy equivalence, it's close enough in low degree to give isomorphisms in cohomology groups. So the way one defines the equivariant cohomology for the punchline of this particular detour through graduate school maths is you let n tend to infinity and take the usual cohomology of this guy. And likewise, if I want to calculate the push forward along JH of the constant sheaf from here, I just take the push forward from here. OK, so where's my perverse filtration? For the those in the know, you expect to see a perverse filtration when you have a proper map. And I'm not claiming that the map from here to here is proper. So how am I going to get my proper map? Let rep n stable framed gamma q be the moduli space of pairs rho a gamma dimensional q rep and f a map of vector spaces from cn to rho. Such that the image of F generates C to the N. Yeah. Such that the image generates rho as a CQ module. Modulo isomorphism, i.e. isomorphisms of rho that send one F to the other. Okay, so the observation is that I can think of this space as being like the space of all such pairs, but without my stability condition. So in particular, I have a map, and I really have run out of space here. Rep n stable frame gamma q. I have an inclusion into here. But this map, one can show, is a GIT quotient. This is a GIT quotient. So in particular, it's a proper map. Something that requires not too much extra reflection is that, in fact, there's an open embedding from here to here. So this space is defined by the condition that the image of F just is the whole of rho. So it certainly satisfies this condition that the image of F generates rho. So when I pass from here to here, I'm kicking out an even smaller subvariety than when I pass from here to here. So the same argument that told me that this gives me an isomorphism in cohomology. So if I call this map iota prime, tells me that the same is true if I replace iota with iota prime. OK, so where have we got to? We've got to the statement that if I want to work out the push forward, the derived push forward of the constant sheaf from here to here, I can calculate it by taking the derived push forward of the constant sheaf from this scheme, which is smooth, I should add, along a proper map. So this cohomology of the push forward, it looks like the cohomology of the push forward along a proper map. So that's the punchline. Hi bar j. This is isomorphic to hi of q dot star. Okay, so when I calculate this cohomology, it looks like I'm calculating the cohomology of a smooth space equipped with a proper map down to some other space. So this is, so we say that JH is approximated by proper maps. And JH enjoys a lot of the properties that proper maps enjoy. So for example, I guess I've got three here. JH lower star and JH lower shriek, which are not the same because it's not actually a proper map. These commute with vanishing cycle functors. So happily yesterday, some of the notation that I'm going to get up on the board was introduced. So say I have some linear combination of cyclic words in my quiver. I get some function on the coarse moduli space and the stack. This is that function. So I have a vanishing cycle functor on the base and a vanishing cycle functor upstairs, and these two maps commute. So it's a general fact that vanishing cycle functors commute with proper maps. And that fact implies this fact for this approximated by proper maps map. But in order to justify the title of the section, I should also say that H, the cohomology of the stack of representations of Q, gamma dimensional representations of Q, carries a perverse filtration. So if you hadn't seen equivariant cohomology before yesterday, there's a good chance you don't know what this means.
Do you want the coefficient to be vanishing cycle?
So this is one implication. a slightly harder implication is this one. So you saved me from giving a garbled account of what the perverse filtration would be. This carries a perverse filtration by just standard techniques. I take the push forward along JH, and I apply essentially this truncation functor for the perverse T structure, and then take the hypercohomology of whatever I get, and that's the ith piece of the perverse filtration. Okay, so that much is fairly standard. This is slightly less standard, but it comes down to the first implication and the fact that this is always an exact functor. Those two things tell me that the same is true of this cohomology. So if you recall from yesterday, this is exactly the kind of cohomology that goes into the Concevich-Soman style koha. Okay. So that's the end of section one. If there are any questions, fire away. Yeah. Of course. I should say this is a running comment for the whole talk. Everything I say will be said for the degenerate stability condition and symmetric quivers, but it's all, I mean, yeah. There's a story of, yeah. What Jan says is right. So if instead I'm interested in the cohomology of the stack of semi-stable representations for some stability condition, I can run the same trick. There's some set of auxiliary moduli problems that go here that show that the map from that stack down to the coarse moduli space is approximated by proper maps. Okay, so section two, Concevich-Soberman koha. Okay, so just to get it up on the board. So I think, yeah, for the rest of this talk, I'm going to assume that Q tilde is a symmetric quiver, which means that for any two vertices, there are as many arrows going from I to J as there are from J to I. The running comment stands. This is not an absolutely essential restriction, but it makes this talk a lot more manageable. Okay, so I think Jan had these as superscripts, but if I start with them as superscripts, I'm bound to go back to my usual conventions halfway through and confuse everyone. So this is the koha. It is a graded algebra, graded by dimension vectors. And I take this vanishing cycle cohomology on this stack, which we're now all entirely happy with because of this diagram. And the multiplication is additive with respect to this. It's also additive with respect to cohomological degree. As long as I apply some care, i.e. shift the gammath piece of this guy by some fixed shift, which I'm just not going to do, but one can do it to make this a cohomologically graded all algebra. In fact, one should do it. Okay, so I want to do this here. So I have if gamma prime plus gamma double prime equals gamma are dimension vectors, I have this usual diagram. I think we're calling this P1. So this just remembers the first term in a short exact sequence. So this is the stack of short exact sequences. And then this map remembers the outer terms. Okay, so one thing to point out is that all of these stacks are smooth, and this is proper. And geometrically, this is somehow very nice. In the case of kohas for two-dimensional categories, there are certain problems that one runs into which can be solved with some ingenuity, but those problems just don't arise here because these stacks are particularly nice and these maps are particularly nice. The payoff is that one has to confront this vanishing cycle sheaf. But one of the sort of takeaways of this talk, I guess, is that it's worth it. It's worth it to deal with this sheaf. Okay, so let me be a little bit, put in a little bit of detail about how this koha works. So throughout anything that looks like Tor or Tor, these will be maps to a point, i.e. the things I take derived direct image along in order to calculate cohomology. So, and also just to save a little bit of space, let me call this A. Oh no, sorry. This A, this B, this C. Okay, so I have a usual map from UB to P0 to star QA. Not much to see here. I can apply the vanishing cycle functor to it, and then take push forward to a point. So this. And I get some map from the vanishing cycle cohomology of this stack to vanishing cycle cohomology of this stack. Sorry, this is my B. By the what's called the Tom Sebastiani isomorphism. It basically says that the Kunneth isomorphism is true for vanishing cycle cohomology. So if I were to take the vanishing cycle cohomology just on this stack, I would get HQ. Oh, sorry. I would have got the gamma prime piece of my koha. And likewise, if I just take the vanishing cycle cohomology on this stack, I get the gamma double prime piece of my koha. Okay, so that's one map. This is this telling me how to pull back along this map in vanishing cycle cohomology. And likewise, I have a map from Q, the constant sheaf. Let's not make the same mistake twice. I have map from the constant sheaf on C to push forward along this map, constant sheaf on A. If I take the Verdier dual of this, I get a map from the lower shriek push forward of QA to this. But this is a proper map, so I have a map from P1 star again, Q A to Q C, where there is some shift here, which in line with my standing conventions, I'm going to not calculate and ignore. And then again, I apply the vanishing cycle functor to this, and then I take the derived push forward along the map from here to a point. And this gives me a map from the vanishing cycle cohomology, this guy, to this. So if I compose these two maps, I get the multiplication. Okay, so like I say, because of the sort of very nice geometric properties of these stacks and these maps, this is actually a lot less, this is quite painless. You just have to sort of swallow the Kool-Aid when it comes to this vanishing cycle sheaf. Okay, so it's actually a little bit unusual to spell things out quite this much, so why have I done it? I can consider this diagram over this diagram. So I take I have my Jordan Holder map on both of these factors. And likewise, Jordan Holder map from here. And then I have a map from the Cartesian product of this coarse moduli space with itself, which I denote direct sum. That's because what are points in here? They are direct sums of simple modules. I mean, if I have a pair of direct sums of simple modules, and I take the direct sum, I get a new direct sum of simple modules. And the observation, or the point, is that the maps defining the multiplication define morphisms of complexes of sheaves on this base down here on X gamma Q. So or to be precise, mixed Hodge modules, or to be very precise, monodromic mixed Hodge modules. So if I consider the category of bounded below mixed Hodge modules, monodromic mixed Hodge modules, but for the sake of actually being able to think about these things, think of these as sheaves on X, Q, where if I abandon the subscript, that means the union over all dimension vectors. This carries a symmetric monoidal structure, a symmetric and it's defined by sending F and G, guys in here, to the direct image along this map here of the external box product of F and G. And what's the punchline? It's that JH star of the vanishing cycles is an algebra object, or is a monoid in C, and it lifts the koha. I.e., if I take the hypercohomology of this sheaf, I get back the koha, and if I take the hypercohomology of these morphisms between the tensor product of JH with itself back to JH, I get the Konsevich-Sogmann product. And all of this is, it's purely formal. But although it's purely formal, it has quite a strong implication, which is that the Konsevich-Sogmann product respects the perverse filtration. So the sort of the free bit of takeaway is that the product preserves the perverse filtration. Before moving on, let me just give a sort of bundle together. Yeah.
Is there any point to looking for model objects in this algebra object?
Say again?
Is there any point looking for modules?
Yeah, so all of your favorite modules, like if I take a framing dimension vector, I can look at framed representations where that's the framing, and I allow the sort of dimension vector at the principal quiver to vary and be raised and lowered by these guys. Then there's a forgetting map from such representations down to this coarse moduli space, given by forgetting the framing, and then passing to the semi-simplification. And all of your favorite module structures lift to module structures in the category of sheaves on here. And is there any point? Yes, definitely. So doing this enables you to show that certain modules are cyclic, that otherwise it would be unclear that they're cyclic.
On this stack, so you really have this scalar action by scaling arrows going one direction or something, and if you divide by that scaling action, do you still have a symmetric monoidal category? Or?
So this will come later. Uh-huh. Yeah. So I mean, you have to be a little bit careful with that. No. The answer is no, because you want any action to preserve the potential.
Oh. Okay.
So for specific potentials, i.e. the one that's about to get on the board, yeah, you can add in this extra C star. Right. Okay, so let me, I don't think I like this board. So, theorem, myself and Sven. If I take the associated graded with respect to this perverse filtration of the Konsevich-Soyman-Koha, again with the proviso that I should have put in a bunch of shifts here to make this thing a cohomologically graded algebra. This is a, what am I calling this? This is a free supercommutative algebra. For the ZQ0 or NQ0 times Z graded. This keeps track of cohomological degree. And it's really an algebra in the category of mixed Hodge structures, in fact. Okay, so what's the idea here? This algebra will typically be non-commutative, but there's some filtration on it such that if I pass to the associated graded, it becomes commutative. So this should remind you of the universal enveloping algebra of a Lie algebra. That's point one. Point two is that the perverse filtration starts in degree one. And let's set math frac G QW to be the first piece of the perverse filtration. So this will inherit a grading by all of this coming from the grading on here. Then the map. GQW tensor Q adjoint U, where this U is the first Chern class of the tautological bundle, which kind of acts on everything in sight. The map from the symmetric algebra, i.e. the free supercommutative algebra generated by this, into HQW, given by multiplication. This is an isomorphism. So really, it's what's known as a Poincaré-Birkhoff-Witt isomorphism. And I wanted to get this on the board because it connects with something that Jan said yesterday. If you put this statement and this statement together, you get another easy corollary, which is the final thing I want to say, which is that this guy is closed under the commutator bracket. If I take the commutator of two things in here, it wants to live in perverse degree two, but the associated graded for the perverse filtration is commutative. So it's zero in the associated graded, so it actually lives in perverse degree one again. And this is what's called the BPS Lie algebra. or at least the positive piece. Any questions about that before I move on to a specific?
And how do you prove the supercommutativity? Something that goes from the train?
No. No.
Will we get any examples?
Any examples? Yeah. I mean, everything from now on is examples. Yeah. Section 3.
So this, the algebra is non-commutative, right?
Yeah, typically.
And the statement?
After you pass to the associated graded. So
there's also a filtration of G.
G is the first perverse piece of the filtration on the koha. Sorry, is my writing illegible? That wouldn't surprise me. This P subscript less than or equal to 1 is take the first piece of the perverse filtration. By this statement, this is the lowest number I can put in here in order to get something non-zero. So you should think of this as being primitive in some respect. And maybe I probably should have said, if I take characteristic functions, i.e. Euler characteristics of hypercohomology or whatever, I get what people generally call BPS invariants or DT invariants. Or remembering that these are secretly mixed Hodge modules, if I take the weight polynomials or virtual Poincaré polynomials, I get refined DT invariants.
Don't you have one in the
You mean if I take zero here?
Yeah,
thanks. But apart from that, nothing. Okay, so this section is called 3D propaganda. So the idea is to try to convince at least some people that it's worth dealing with vanishing cycles. So let me give you a class of examples. Now, it'll be somewhat familiar from yesterday. So set Q tilde to be what was being called yesterday Q hat. This is the tripled quiver. Is this the?
Yeah, I'm confused. You started Q tilde was symmetric.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean,
yeah, all right.
I'm using your definition, right? So, Q hat, for Q hat, I double and then add loops. This is symmetric in the sense of for any two pair of vertices, there are as many arrows going one way as the other. Associated to Q. So for those who weren't here yesterday, let me just. This is what's called the doubled quiver. So for every arrow, I add another arrow, A star, going the other way, union a bunch of loops on for each vertex. And there is a sort of standard cubic potential for this, which is I take the sum over the vertices of these new loops times the sum over the arrows of the original quiver of A commutator, its opposite. So if I'd started with Q, the Jordan quiver, i.e. the one-loop quiver, then I would get Q tilde equals the three-loop quiver, A star, omega, and W equals a potential that we met yesterday, A commutator A star. Okay. So something's happening here, which is if I take the Jacobi algebra of the free path algebra of this quiver for this potential, I get CXYZ or CAA star omega, which contains the pre-projective algebra for the original quiver inside it, i.e. the algebra in of polynomials in A and A star. And this is a general phenomenon, so I don't think this deserves to be called a proposition, but a fact. this is isomorphic to the pre-projective algebra for Q. Join one variable, which I'm going to call Z. Z is really the sum over the I of omega I's. So remember, what are you supposed to do? You're meant to cyclically permute each lattice to the front and then delete it. If I, to get these non-commutative derivatives, which give me the relations in the Jacobi algebra. If I cyclically permute the omegas to the front, well, they're already at the front, and delete them, I get the relations that define the moment, the pre-projective algebra. If I do the same for A, I get the relations which tell me that the omegas commute with the A stars, and vice versa. And so that's how we get this fact. and to connect with Ufang's suggestion, C star acts on everything in sight with different weights depending on the genesis of the arrows. So the original arrows I'm going to act on with weight 1. The reverse arrows I'm going to act on with weight 1. And these new loops I'm going to act on with weight minus 2. So now this is invariant, trace of it is invariant. And so I get a C star action on everything in sight. By a dimensional reduction, I have an isomorphism from the Kontsevich-Soibman style cohort for this quiver with potential, with a cohort for the pre-projective algebra. So now this is the cohort for representations of objects in a sort of two Calabi-Yau category. So there are, as I intimated earlier, some difficulties in defining push-forward and pull-back maps, but all of these difficulties were essentially solved by Schiffman and Bassereau. So this is really an algebra defined by Schiffman and Bassereau. I can add this extra C star parameter into the mix. Instead of taking the quotient of A gamma by the gauge group, I could take the quotient of A gamma by the gauge group cross C star to get some other cohomology. And this is an isomorphism of algebras after some minor modifications. So where's the propaganda? I want to say that the right-hand side is more natural. What do I really mean by that? Well, we all know and love the geometric representation theory given to us by Nakajima and his quiver varieties. The thing that most obviously acts on that whole story, or for which those cohomologies are obviously modules, is this. This also sort of comes to us first as human beings. This sort of came first. And this doesn't involve any vanishing cycles, so no magic sheaf. So I think by some measure, the right-hand side is more natural. But the propaganda is that the left-hand side is where we prove everything. So left-hand side is where we prove everything. It's where we prove things. So let me give an assortment of this is generally not true. In fact, I think I'm not going to put anything on the board in the next 5 minutes that can be proved by considering the 2D cohort. And well, audience members can consider that as a challenge if they're bored to come up with the 2D specific proof. Like I said at a couple of points, this guy, as well as its extra C star equivariant version, carries a mixed Hodge structure. And for the challenge, you're not allowed to assume that Q is finite type. Okay, the mixed Hodge structure on here is pure Tate type. Okay, and this implies a lot of what comes next. So, that if I put the extra C star parameter in, this is a flat deformation. Of 3. That if I don't put the extra C star in, this is isomorphic as a graded object, so it's a graded vector space, to the symmetric algebra generated by the direct sum over gamma, not zero, a dimension vector, V gamma. Tensor Q U, but this is the same U that appeared earlier, and where the characteristic function of V gamma is equal to the Katz polynomials, which I'm not going to define for Q. So these count. This is a sort of weird relation. So these polynomials count absolutely indecomposable representations of dimension vector gamma over the field FQ, not C. For my quiver Q. How many of these do I want to go through? In order to back up my point to Jan, let me give you this one. H pi Q with the extra C star added in, this embeds in the shuffle algebra with the extra C star, with the extra C star for the doubled quiver. So I think this will be a particularly hard challenge to complete, because this was actually a conjecture in the original Shiffman-Vassarow paper on the AGT, correspondence. So this is an injection. And why, why care about this? So it's quite hard to calculate things in here, but this is, anyone can calculate things in here. So this actually gives some means to calculate things. So that's 4.
Do you understand the representation on the pre-projective algebra?
On the Kohar for the pre-projective algebra?
Yeah.
Let me let me add that in. I'm conscious of the time, so I'm not going to finish this list. So if I take the zeroth piece of the perverse filtration, but not for the map down to the coarse moduli space of representations of the triple quiver, but down to the coarse moduli space of representations of the doubled quiver, then I do get a zeroth perverse piece. It means I consider the map down to the coarse moduli space of representations of the doubled quiver. Yeah. This is isomorphic to the universal enveloping algebra of this algebra, with no U adjoined. Again, the multiplication here respects this perverse filtration too. So this is an isomorphism of algebras where H0 of this algebra is isomorphic as a Lie algebra to the usual Katz-Moody Lie algebra for Q. Yeah. What? No. No. Not that I know. I haven't thought about it. Okay, so final one is that H by Q is isomorphic to the universal enveloping algebra of this BPS-Lie algebra adjoined U. So now, because I haven't restricted to some piece of the perverse filtration, I get the whole thing, and I get this. So this looks a little bit like this PBW isomorphism, but it's really stronger. This PBW isomorphism didn't come with the claim that I actually was looking at the universal enveloping algebra of some algebra here, of some Lie algebra here. But now I am making that claim in this special case. And in the last 5 minutes, obviously I can't really say very much about any of these, but let me say a little bit about the last one, because I think it sort of brings out what the benefits are of passing to the 3D model, or of not dimensionally reducing. And I think I can go through this quickly because several of the key concepts were introduced in.
May I ask you another question?
Yeah.
The GQ plus on the right-hand side on fiber, what is?
This is the usual.
It's Q is finite type, or Q is
Kac-Smoot.
The usual Kac-Smoot.
Yeah, so all you have to worry about is, are there loops? If there are loops, then remove them. Pass to the real subquiver. Okay. Either the full subquiver based at the vertices that don't have any loops. This becomes true.
There's the positive part, right?
Yeah. Okay. So, four. Very briefly. What's the idea for, why is this true? So, instead of pushing forward along JH, I want to consider the push forward along lambda, where lambda is the map from rep Q tilde to sim A1, which just remembers the generalized eigenvalues. With multiplicity of this operator Z. Okay, so this has a monoidal structure. This is configurations of unordered points in A1. And if I have a pair of such things, I could take their union. So just the same way that I could talk about this guy as an algebra in some category of unbounded mixed Hodge modules on some monoid, same is true here. Okay, so like I say, this will be somewhat familiar. Let U, and to start with, I'm going to assume that 0 is contained in U, be a ball in A1. Then claim is that the restriction map in vanishing cycle cohomology let's fix a dimension vector. Is an isomorphism, where this is the locus where, well, this is really take the pre-image of some U. This comes from C star invariance of trace W. So that's claim one. Claim two is that the same is true for U replaced by V, where now V disjoint from U. So in particular, V can't contain the origin. And this comes from A1 invariance of trace W. That is, if I add a scalar multiple of the identity to all of the loops rho, this leaves this trace function invariant. So now, I have a sort of standard trick, which I should say this was really taught to me by Kevin Costello. I can consider the following sequence of morphisms. I can. Take the representations whose generalized eigenvalues live in this disjoint union of walls. Restrict to it. Again, by this magic Tom Sebastiani isomorphism, this is isomorphic to the tensor product of the pre-image under lambda of these guys. And then via the inverse of this isomorphism twice, I have a map from here to isomorphism from this line to this tensor product. And this is a co-commutative co-product. For the same reasons as we saw yesterday. So I should wrap up 2 minutes ago. So, I mean, this essentially gives it to us. It's now formal. I have a connected bi-algebra and so it's automatically U of V something. But because we already know the size of this coha from, I think, number 3, we know how big this thing is. So we get that this is a universal. Universal enveloping algebra of something of the right size. So I picked that one because that's the easiest to get out. And I think it sort of makes clear what the sort of added bonus of adding in this extra A1 direction to get a 3 Calabi-Yau instead of a 2-dimensional situation is. So that's a good place to stop. Thanks for your patience.
The statement for all type triple cleavers?
Yeah.
Only for that example.
Oh, no, I should, yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously it's true for this example, but if you start with any quiver and triplet and give it its normal potential. Yeah, sorry, I should have said that.
Any other questions?
So you mentioned Gankens in the name.
Yeah.
You need to add these star equivariants to get them. Is that what?
I mean, I totally agree with 3D propaganda with the player that they also wrote.
Yeah, sure.
Right, because these 2D people, they also use the theoretical version, for example.
Yeah.
Igor gave a talk.
Yeah.
There is no theory of a theoretical version of the theory of
cycle. Well, I think there is. If I should take the K theory of the category of equivariant matrix factorizations on A for the function given by the potential. That seems to be the correct. Yeah. And I've done nothing in this domain, but I know that Tudor Padarari, Devesh Malik's student, the last time I saw him talk about this, he was saying very encouraging things about actually making that make sense. I think there's an obvious thing to try. That's all I will stick my name to. Yeah.
What, elliptic?
Yeah, for that, okay. And I mean, in the matrix factorization story, the sort of exciting thing, as far as I'm concerned, is there does appear to be some analog of the intersection cohomology coming from work of Vandenberg and Speller-Spenko, i.e. some subcategory of matrix factorizations on A or equivariant matrix factorizations on A, which plays the role of the intersection cohomology, which, according to the theorem with Sven, which has disappeared now, really plays the role of the BPS invariants. Passing to elliptic cohomology, I have no idea even what to expect, but certainly no idea how to find that sort of core object that controls everything else.
Can you compute what happens like to leading order in the Hungarian parameter? Can you see the non-coding?
The answer must be yes. I don't know. Yes. Okay. How I would do it is number 4. So to make 4 true, I have to add this in. And here, I mean, the calculations in here actually get pretty grim pretty quickly, but whatever, a computer can do them, and yeah, you can work out the answers there.
So you get that perverse filtration is not interesting on the primitive part.
The primitive part.
On this. You get, it's just P1 somewhere. But if you go to the Higgs bundle story, you should get some non-trivial perverse filtration, right?
That's right.
And does something work for that case?
The obvious conjecture is that the BPS sheaf there, along with its perverse filtration, doesn't depend on the Euler characteristic, doesn't depend on degree. So the sort of exotic BPS invariants come from when you set degree equals 0. And the claim, which I have no means of proving, would be that that cohomology, along with its perverse filtration, is preserved under changing the degree of my Higgs bundle. Whether that gives you the means to prove anything about cohomology of moduli spaces of Higgs bundles, I think, remains for another day.
Yeah. So you are not allowed to take Q to the finite
type? Oh, sorry. I mean, I just didn't want to get deluged with counterexamples to my claim from people. the meta claim, the propaganda claim, was that all of these things I put on the board, you will not be able to prove without some argument that relies on vanishing cycles somewhere. That was the meta claim. If, for example, you were to take Q to be the quiver, which is a point, I would not stand behind that claim. Yeah.
That's all. The claims are true also for that case.
Yeah. The claim was a presentational claim, not a mathematical one. Yeah.
Let's thank the speaker again.
Thanks.